Welcome to the Angel Pool conference call. This is Michael Price of CEO Ventures. I serve as the 2011 volunteer chair of angelpool.org, and I'll be moderating today's call. We have an excellent panel today, which will be discussing future hot angel sectors, skating to where the puck will be. Before we begin, just some quick housekeeping announcements. Everyone is currently in mute. A number of questions were submitted in advance that we'll be working our way through, but if you have any burning questions during the first part, please press star 6 to unmute your mic and go ahead and ask your question. Please barge in and don't be shy, as it's typically a fairly loud group. Just please remember that after you hit star 6 to make your comment or ask your question, please be sure to hit star 6 again after asking it so that the background noise does not get out of hand. After the panelists' remarks, I will then remind everyone how to unmute their phones to ask questions again, but remember to hit star 6 again right after asking your questions to reduce the background noise. For those joining the call for the very first time, angelpool.org is an organization of volunteer leaders who help angel groups across North America and is dedicated to helping their leaders build strong angel groups in their cities to drive jobs, innovation, and exciting new companies. For those angel groups that need additional capital to complete a seed round or that would like access to more deal flow, the Angel Pool Syndication Network is now the world's largest, providing easy monthly access to a large number of other angel groups and deals within their region. This also provides the members of each angel group total visibility into all the best deals in their region. Angel Pool also organizes knowledge and educational events like this one to share best practices and lift each other's angel skills and knowledge. This ensures each angel group and their angels better fulfill their missions of helping entrepreneurs be more successful so that our portfolios, in turn, will also be more successful. With that, let's go ahead and begin. Again, today's topic is future hot angel sectors, skating to where the puck will be. We've got a great group of panelists today in no particular order. Let me just shout their names out. They are Clean Energy Venture Group with David Miller in Boston. We have Cornerstone Angels with Michael Gruber in Northbrook. We have Investor Circle, Nick Flores in San Francisco. We have Pittsburgh Equity Partners, Ed Engler in Pittsburgh. And we have Multiplicity Accelerator, Chris Kay, in Toronto. I'll ask each panelist to briefly introduce themselves to the group for a quick minute, and then we'll begin the panel discussion. So first up, and by the way, just to make sure, Dan Von Kohorn, if you're there, please be sure to shout out. But with that, with David Miller at Clean Energy Venture Group, if you could go ahead and begin with your introduction.
Certainly. And thanks, Michael, for organizing. So my name is David Miller. I'm representing the Clean Energy Venture Group. So,
and by the way, David, the sound is a little bit light. I'm not sure if you can talk louder.
Okay. Is that a little bit better?
That's perfect. Thank you.
All right. Excellent. Okay. Well, as our name says, we focus on clean energy and broadly defined. Our group, though, is an early stage angel group and probably earlier stage than some of the other groups that are presenting on this call. We typically invest in companies that are at the seed stage, pre-revenue, past the research and science project phase, but normally pre-commercialization. Our group is composed entirely of former operating executives. Every member of the group generally has run a company themselves. Every member of the group now is focused on investing in clean energy. And so we look as our primary value add, stepping into these very early stage, seed stage companies and providing some operating expertise, networks, and helping the companies grow to the next stage.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, David. Cornerstone Angels, Michael Gruber.
Yes, this is Michael Gruber. We're, again, as I mentioned, we're located in Northbrook, Illinois, just north of Chicago. We've been running our group in sort of various forms since 2004. We have a portfolio company of over 22 companies. Our group is pretty diversified in terms of the sectors that we'll invest in, although clean tech and energy is one of which we're active in, also across software, manufacturing, as well as most other sectors except no real estate and no life sciences. We are very active in syndicating and investing alongside other angel groups, alongside a number of larger venture firms. We focus primarily on Series A, Series B level investments, although we have participated alongside some Tier 1, Tier 2 VCs in larger funding rounds, sometimes rounds in excess of $50 or $100 million type rounds, of which we've been a participant in that. So we'll look forward to talking with you about a number of these sectors.
Okay, thank you, Michael. Next, Nick Flores with Investor Circle in San Francisco.
Sure. Thanks again, Michael, and good morning, everybody, or afternoon, depending on where you are. So I am with Investor Circle. We are a national angel group that is focused on early-stage companies that are capable of making a large social or an environmental impact. The organization is nearly 20 years old. Our members have invested roughly $152 million into 234 companies that are spread across six different sectors, which I'll go into probably later in this call. Our focus is really on companies that have taken their product or service to market and started to achieve some sort of market validation. But I think because we cover so many different areas, it's hard to pinpoint or get too rigid with our criteria. But happy to talk more about some of the deals that we're seeing in a minute or two.
Okay, thank you, Nick. Ed Engler with Pittsburgh Equity Partners in Pittsburgh.
This is Ed Engler, Managing Partner at Pittsburgh Equity Partners. We are a microcap venture fund funded by angels, and so we are a fund at our core, and then our angels choose to jump on board with each individual deal on a case-by-case basis if they want to take an additional bite of the apple. We are focused on capital-efficient companies within a few hundred miles, and primarily in the IT sector, but also do look at life sciences and clean tech as long as they are capital efficient, which we define as not going to need more than $10 million to get to an exit and preferably even less than $5 million, with a focus of investing the money on growing sales and marketing efforts.
Okay, thank you. And Chris Kay with Multiplicity Accelerator in Toronto.
Hi. Thanks very much for having me on the call. So Multiplicity is actually quite a new venture. Give a little background on my prior one. I was the group manager for the Ryerson Angel Network, was the first university-led angel investment group in Canada, focused on early-stage technology, mainly technology startups driven by youth entrepreneurs, so under 35, management teams under 35. We were mainly focused on Southern Ontario, and didn't go too much beyond those borders. I've actually moved on from the Ryerson Angel Network onto found the Multiplicity Accelerator, which is a sales-based accelerator and angel group. We focus specifically on software, specifically SaaS, no clean tech, hardware, or life sciences. And we work with companies who have come out of the prototyping stage and are in the process of acquiring beta customers, converting those beta customers into paying customers, developing strategic partnerships, and then raising seed round funding based on the traction and commercialization that they achieve in the acceleration phases.
Okay, very good. And I think that's it for the panelists. Dan Von Cohorn, if by chance you're there, hit *6 and shout out to let us know you're there. But with that, let's go over to kind of the first topic of the panel, and that is the next big angel sectors. Maybe we can get each panelist's thoughts on future hot angel segments. And for lack of any better word, in terms of rotation, David, you're going to kind of regret being the lowest on the alphabetical scale with a clean energy venture group, but maybe I can ask you to begin.
I'd be happy to. Well, folks might not be surprised to hear that we think clean energy is a hot area. And I'll speak on two levels briefly. I mean, first of all, why we think clean energy is an area to focus on, and then subsectors within clean energy, because we literally see hundreds of deals within that sector. And I should mention, by the way, our portfolio currently consists of 12 active companies, and we primarily invest in the New England region, although we do have a portfolio company in Ontario. So why clean energy? The energy market worldwide is over $4 trillion, about the largest market there is. And if you look at, the current state of affairs, fossil fuels, whatever your political leanings are, fossil fuels are finite, energy demand is increasing, climate change is a real and more of a pressing issue every day, and clean energy is the only way out of that conundrum in an over $4 trillion market. The only question is timing. So we believe this is going to clean energy will be the largest industry over the next century, and the companies that are at seed stage today will be some of the biggest companies in the world at some point over the next few decades. So within clean energy, particular areas that our group is interested in is energy efficiency. Partially as angels, we focus also on capital efficient businesses, and energy efficiency businesses tend to be more capital efficient than other forms of clean energy businesses. And also that's a tremendously untapped area. It's a low hanging fruit. There's a tremendous economic potential in energy efficiency, particularly in the residential market. The commercial energy and energy efficiency market is perhaps oversaturated, whereas the residential market, your typical home, some of the statistics are buildings use more energy than any other part of our economy overall, and residential buildings use more energy than commercial buildings. So if you're going to attack any segment, residential buildings is one of the largest segments that you can possibly attack for energy use. And your typical residential building uses about twice as much energy as it needs. So about half the energy is being truly wasted. And it's extremely difficult. The reason this is the case today in 2011 is it's extremely difficult to get at it. How do you go out to 100 million homes, and get each of those homes to be more efficient and affect the behavior of homeowners and affect the structure of those homes? That said, even though it's a tremendous challenge, I think that challenge is going to be addressed. I think it has to be. And I think there is tremendous economic potential in addressing it. Over the long run, you're going to see smart meters, smart grid addressing a lot of that, but that's, within maybe a decade or so time frame. I think there'll be interim solutions before then. Everything from nuts and bolts, walk into the houses, do air sealing and insulation, to more technology-oriented solutions of controlling thermostats, controlling energy use, monitoring energy use, affecting user behavior. And there have been some businesses that have begun to be successful in those areas. I think business models are evolving, and I think there will be more.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. And let's go over to Michael Gruber. Hot areas that you see?
Sure. Well, very much in a similar fashion, we're also very much focused on clean tech, and I'll just mention that one of the initiatives that I'm involved with, we're being very active right now in trying to help spearhead and lead a syndication collaboration network focused on the clean tech space, and so a number of the folks actually on this call are participants in that sort of initiative. So very much in line with what we just said, and using a very broad definition of clean tech, we're very interested in energy efficiency, we're interested in waste management, we're very interested in water, we're very interested in many things that just increase the productivity of typical manufacturing processes. So again, this is the bolt of trying to find inefficiencies in the way that we do it and have greater output with less inputs. Obviously, the capital efficiency nature of this is also very critical. But, the next area, which hasn't been spoken about, and obviously it's been very much in the press on more of the IT, internet spaces, things relating to, mobile, local, and social, and how you interweave each of those things. It's very interesting. You could obviously continue to look at the trends just based on the number of actual mobile devices, and you see that with the tablets, but everything that's sort of connected, and you sort of have N connected devices now, of which most people have multiple uses, not only on their person, but in their home and work. And the ability to interconnect those and being able to have a seamless content experience and to be able to then leverage your ability both for communicating as well as purchasing wherever you are and providing relevant information. I think there will continue to be great opportunities there. There's been a lot of, saturation in the marketplace for sort of deal-type opportunities. Obviously, there's hundreds of deal-type opportunities that have followed our Chicago-born company, Groupon. And so we'll see a fallout from that. But I think, in general, if you continue to sort of look at whether there are interesting intersection of this mobile, local, social, there'll be a lot of interesting applications. And with that, sort of the last piece of, we're seeing, education, and sort of education broadly defined, will have a lot of interesting applications. One for sure, just thinking about sort of the retraining of our workforce, and a lot of it being that manufacturing is changing and sort of clean tech sort of solutions are there, trying to find ways to train people more appropriately. We're living in sort of this difficult economic times, trying to retrain people. You've also seen sort of the for-profit education world take off, in which there's been a lot of interesting opportunities. So lots of new innovative business solutions, both online and offline, for education will also be an interesting sector.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much. Next, Nick Flores with Investor Circle.
Sure. So the one thing I should sort of caveat my remarks with is, as I mentioned before, we cover quite a few different sectors. And so I'll just briefly touch upon what we're seeing in each one of those things. First, energy and environment. I don't have a whole lot to add that hasn't already been said by David and Michael. Energy and environment is pretty broad, but I would agree that we're seeing quite a few energy efficiency plays, in partly because of the capital efficiency, as has been mentioned, but also because I think these companies can scale a little bit more quickly. We're seeing quite a few software as a service applications, not only with regard to energy efficiency, but also in data monitoring and management across various renewable energy plays, particularly solar installations. So I think that's a pretty interesting area. And again, for us, just focused on capital efficiency, the project finance, renewable energy deals that, for whatever reason, we still get applications for, just probably aren't as palatable to our members. The second sector that we cover is, again, broad health, biotech, and wellness. I think within this space, we see a range of different things, but the ones that I think get the most traction amongst our members are those that are focused on medical devices, particularly those that have already received all of the various regulatory and FDA approvals. Our members aren't necessarily interested in financing those sorts of expensive tests. So just so many different wide-ranging illnesses that can be treated, and just seeing a lot more innovation and capital efficient plays in that space as well. I would agree with Michael, the third sector is education, and I would agree with Michael that there's a lot of different applications. I think that for us, we're a little bit more focused on sort of K through 12. Again, the one thing I should back up and say is that our members are all focused on this new buzzword of the day, impact investments. Just speaking about sort of market potential across all six of these areas, we're starting to see a lot more capital being devoted to areas that heretofore were probably thought of as a little bit more niche. So a sector like education, I think, is particularly relevant because, I don't think anybody is unaware of some of the problems that exist within the American educational system. And so in the K-12 space in particular, I think that our members are increasingly seeing that there's a lot of potential for impact, particularly given the scale that can be achieved quickly. We're seeing education technology plays that have significant and dramatic effects on children's learning abilities. And some people are saying out here in Silicon Valley, where I live, that this could potentially represent another bubble because there's so much capital going towards some of these various application makers. And again, given what Michael said about just sort of the mobile, local, social element or undercurrent, I just think you see a lot more schools increasingly using things like tablets and iPads that are a great benefit to not only the students, but also the teachers and the parents and really connecting them all together. So seeing quite a few platforms that really increase sort of the connectivity between those three constituencies. Community and economic development, I'm guessing this is our fourth sector. I'm guessing it's probably not of as much interest to the remainder of the group because I'll be the first to admit and returns aren't typically quite as high, return expectations, that is. That said, certainly a lot of opportunities in bringing things like healthy food, access to credit, financial inclusion to underprivileged areas across the country. And I think that's an important area to our members. Fifth category for us is social media and software. I frankly, again, given our social impact, and when I say social, I mean helping sort of underprivileged groups or traditionally marginalized populations, not necessarily like a Facebook-type application. We don't see quite as many interesting opportunities here as we'd like. We see a lot of Groupon copycats for things like green companies, platforms that are meant to support nonprofits, a lot of well-meaning entrepreneurs, but I haven't seen quite as many interesting opportunities there. And last but not least, for us, our sixth category is consumer products. I think that's where Investor Circle has historically made its mark. But I think this space is getting much more mature. It's certainly less niche than it had been in the past. And when I say consumer products, I mean sustainable consumer products, typically organic food, water, beverage, those sorts of companies. So we still get a lot of those applications, you know, a lot more sort of gluten-free, probiotics, you know, just take a spin through your local Whole Foods and you'll see some of the things that are really trending. I can't say that a lot of things in this area particularly overwhelm me, but always some pretty interesting niche plays if that's an area that's been of interest to our members. So sorry for the broad range, but that's just sort of our focus.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Ed Engler with Pittsburgh Equity Partners.
Yeah, thank you. So I think at the highest level, we talk about mobile, local, and social as big trends, and I think those, you know, that's without a doubt true. I actually would put most activity in those areas as in the oversaturated category at this point. There's, you know, only so many solutions that every little local mom-and-pop pizza shop hairdresser can buy, and it's a pretty small number in my opinion, so it's going to get very crowded very quickly. Same thing with mobile. I think that the days when you can be the mobile solution for something or other are over, and now it's really every company has to have a mobile-enabled solution, or at least a strategy of how they address mobile workers, because that's going to be, it's, you know, already a larger number of mobile users than there are internet users, and it's destined to become 10 times as big. So you have to be addressing your users on mobile. That's not enough to base a company on. That's a feature of your company. I actually think that healthcare is a huge one. The same way one of the earlier speakers mentioned that, you know, global warming and energy efficiency are kind of an inevitable thing that we have to address. I think the cost of healthcare is in there, and that inevitable thing that we have to address. And I think the pain will become much more pronounced much sooner than potentially on the energy side of things, depending on government policies. But just the amount of dollars going into healthcare is unsustainable. So we have to figure that out. And I think that if you have a solution that can actually reduce hard cost savings, hard costs for providers, if you can reduce costs at hospitals, especially if you have kind of like a 90-day payback or something that's fairly quick,
that's something that you're going to get a lot of traction with. And beyond that, I think it gets a little bit more challenging. One of the biggest macro trends, though, that I see, I think is maybe most important for the people on this call, is that of the ability for entrepreneurs to build companies in a capital-efficient manner. That, you know, for a few $100,000, $1 million, certainly $2 million, you can build a software company, get the product launched, go get dozens, hundreds, maybe thousands of customers, and prove that there's really a market there, and then sell the company for, you know, the median exit for angel and venture-backed companies is $20 million. So let's just use that as a target, since it's the most common one. If you can get into a company on terms that let you get out at $20 million with a very nice return, that's going to be a real sweet spot for angels. No need to go to big VCs and take the big dilution. Usually it's an early exit, something you can achieve in less than 5 years, and therefore you get a much more substantial IRR. So I'll leave it at that and let some other people talk.
Okay, very good. If there's any venture capitalists listening, we apologize, but it's just the way it is. And with that, let's go over to Chris Kay with Multiplicity Accelerator.
Yeah, we're completely focused on the software side, and specifically SaaS. So what we look is probably a little bit more different, but I'll talk about a little bit what we've seen a lot and what interests us. Specifically in Canada, there's been a huge lack in investment in the financial sector. The banks in Canada, as conservative they are, haven't really invested in technology in about 20 years. So we've actually seen a lot of flock towards financial technology or fintech. The other side of it is there are a lot of finance professionals who have lost their positions over the last number of years and actually gone into startups. I run into investment bankers or ex-investment bankers and ex-private equity professionals that have now become founders of startups on a regular basis. So there's no surprise that there's a bit of flood of fintech companies in Toronto specifically over the last, I'd say, probably year. I'd echo the sentiments of the group in saying a lot of the deal-based companies have become somewhat passe. We stopped looking at those probably just over a year ago. It was originally, you know, deal-buying sites, and then it was deal-buying sites in different niches, and then it was white-labeling of deal-buying sites, and then it was analytics for deal-buying sites. So I think they've kind of run the game in every way to play that model, and only a few have succeeded. Other things we've seen is a lot in the mobile payment space, which I think ties back into fintech. There's still quite a bit of disruption left needed in mobile payments. It's still not fully accessible, or at least here, we haven't seen it a wide adoption of payment that way. Specifically, what we look at in Multiplicity are a lot of SaaS focused on the SMB space. Mainly things that can generate traffic or revenue for the SMB. So I would agree that there's only so many deal buying or advertising schemes that a small business can buy into, but at the same time, we do see a lot of take up from those businesses, from those customers, in when you can drive traffic to them, or if you can improve margins or drive revenue to them, aside from the standard deal buying, which we found only works in certain business models. Again, I'll echo saying the mobile and social spaces. However, I'm a little bit past the social space and mobile to a certain degree. Obviously, there's been a lot of situations where social elements have come into different business models, and that's fine. Basing your entire business off of social elements, I don't think that's really a business. I think that's a feature. Again, basing your entire business on a mobile element, again, is a feature. And the other side of it is we've started to draw away from standalone applications. We find it interesting if there's a platform and one of the delivery methods is via mobile or via browser, depending on what that market that the platform is going into can be interesting. But unfortunately, there are a lot of there is a lot of development going on of just standalone applications, which in my opinion almost become a content play, which is very difficult to replicate. So we've tried to shy away from those types of things. Some things I've seen a lot of growth in is analytics, specifically on social or on advertising, and then advertising social or digital advertising buying or aggregation or optimization. We've also seen some interesting stuff happen there. And that's probably about it. We're pretty across the range, but there's some things that we've seen not really take off quite well, and we're more interested in companies that are solving tangible problems, and less about the coolness factor of a lot of pieces of technology. And we are seeing a lot of technology being built on the coolness factor that isn't necessarily solving a problem. And is having a hard time generating the customer validation that somebody's willing to pay for their technology.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. And I guess I can put my two cents in as well. You know, beginning with the elephant in the room, obviously social media will continue being a driving force behind technology startups. Social media has gotten incredible adoption rates among consumers. Facebook, Groupon, Twitter are all trending toward becoming verbs like Google did. But I think it's still lacking on the enterprise level. Someone will have to come out with a fully integrated social media platform for the enterprise that really connects each and every employee to the business. A lot of business applications are trying to integrate some form of social media, and there are a number of pure plays out there, but the problem is that it isn't integrated nor enterprise-wide enough, yet so many disruptive launches remain in that space, in my opinion. Another continuing hot spot is mobile enterprise. The volume of devices now deployed, which are advanced enough to support most business software uses, has increased exponentially over the past several years. The Android growth curve is still young, as an example. The businesses will continue adopting smartphones, tablets, et cetera, for their employees that need to mobilize their applications will keep becoming more and more important. Another area is fintech migrated, such as mobile payments. It was already brought up twice before, but you know, mobile everything in the developed countries, mobile everything in third world countries. Everyone can afford a cell phone in the third world, but few can afford a computer. As smartphones become more mainstream, affordable in the third world, and as networks develop to support more data transfer, explosive growth in mobile will continue. Mobile commerce, mobile content and media, any form of mobile information that can flow over the airwaves. I think that to the point of our first two commenters on green energy, you know, home energy management is going to be huge. The world is committed to reducing its carbon footprint as governments continue cracking down on consumer energy use. Devices, emitting for light or heat or regulation of the home more intelligently will become the norm. One good thing that continues to go strong here in the South in particular is healthcare IT. I think all of us have had our fill of EMR plans. If I see one more electronic medical record plan, I'm just going to find the tallest building and leap off of it. But there are lots of additional innovations within the healthcare IT segment that are undoubtedly coming, and there will be a number of huge fortunes made in that sector. So you know, all things surrounding the healthcare IT space. This was already mentioned by two of the panelists, but that tech-enabled education will continue to loom large. There's still lots of productivity gains still remaining in the educational sector that allow for remote classroom, digital learning. You know, I've already had a couple of exits in that space, and it's one that I look at closely. Cybersecurity will continue to be a strong area. Any other thoughts by any of the panelists or any postscripts by the panelists before we move on to the next question? All right, let's move on to the next one, and that is market segments that likely have not panned out or that are likely to become oversaturated at this point. And with that, maybe we do kind of a round robin as well. With that, David Miller, any thoughts on that?
Sure, and I'll keep this brief because we have a long agenda and running out of time. Focusing within clean energy, I think silicon PV plays are really, really tough, as we've seen. Obviously, there's been some high-profile bankruptcies. That's just a tough business in the U.S., and I mean, we saw a ton of plans in that area and nothing that we would invest in. And also beginning to see oversaturation, as I briefly mentioned before, on commercial building energy efficiency, because it is the low-hanging fruit. Commercial customers are much more easier to access. So
seen dozens, if not 100, plans around commercial building efficiency, and some of those companies will be successful, but relatively low percentage.
Okay, very good. Thank you, David. Michael Gruber. Any comments on that?
I think a lot of it, has been said, because I think we mixed some of it in, even what we thought was hot and things that we didn't think were so good. But so yeah, I'm thinking within the clean tech side, as it was mentioned, it's a lot of us, both as angels as well as the VC, sort of learned that certain segments of the clean tech space is just are not capital efficient, and so it takes on a different model. So the Silicon PV, as was mentioned, is sort of an area. I think certain things relating to hydro or other large, ethanol plants, et cetera, with anything that happened to be capital efficient, as well as things that required large amounts of subsidies, they became, as an example, ethanol became oversaturated and just as a bad model for just a traditional plant, unless you have some really unique technology or going into a different space such as sort of cellulosics. Within that area, and I think we went into sort of the traditional, a lot of these daily deal sites, et cetera, is way saturated as well. So I think we covered, a lot of the clearly obvious ones to me.
Okay, very good. Nick Flores, anything to add?
No, I don't. No, I think everything that I say would be duplicative, but.
Okay, very good. Anything, Ed?
No, I think, it's good to keep moving through our agenda here.
Okay, very good. Any, Chris, any postscripts on that?
Just daily deals and standalone mobile applications, that's it.
Yeah, I can add a few. In addition to daily deals, Airbnb spinoffs, I've probably gotten 40 business plans in the last 2 months on, every way you could slice the Airbnb model, from tools to RVs to boats to you name it. It's come my way. Only so many of those can survive. Obviously, past victims like RFID. Nanotech and genomics it's been very interesting to watch over the last 3 years, but, both of those have really struggled to put out some, a number of winners, just a few winners in those sectors. And it turns out in green energy and clean tech, it's, you've got to be pretty smart to make a living in that sector. They're just not, handing money out on every street corner, on terms of successes. All right, let's move on. Best practices on how angels can see more deal flow in future sectors of growth. Would anyone like to lead off this topic?
Well, I've been the lead on everything. So we spend a ton of time in university labs, and partially because of the stage of businesses that we work with, but. That's certainly, if you're looking for future sectors of growth, that is a ripe area to look.
I would actually echo those comments. I do have pretty strong relationships with a set of universities around here, and there's some strong computer sciences programs, specifically in the University of Waterloo and University of Toronto, up here in Ontario. Very, very strong engineering departments. And oddly enough, I'm seeing as young as second and third year university students going on to start their own software companies. In fact, I had a meeting 2 weeks ago with one set of entrepreneurs who actually decided, they essentially pulled a Mark Zuckerberg, decided they wouldn't finish up their degrees because were planning on going and raising VC funding. At the same time, a lot of young, talented students are being plucked out of school to go and work at other software companies as well. We have a number of outreach events that we use to profile companies in our community that we think are working on something interesting, and that's kind of an early stage way of viewing them and finding out what they're working on and getting to know the team. And then as well in Toronto, there's actually a great community of networking events and industry events. I was at one, a startup weekend has we've been running in Toronto for about a year now. Some great events come out of that, some great technology and teams come out of that. So there's a pretty well-knit community here of technology startups, and really it's just a matter of getting out and meeting them and talking to the entrepreneurs and finding out what they're working on and building a network. We receive a lot of our deal flow through our personal networks of other people in the community that get in contact with us and recommend us looking at different companies.
Yeah, Michael, this is Ed Engler. I'll also emphasize the importance of being close to the universities, and we do that closely with Carnegie Mellon and the University of Pittsburgh here in the city. The one problem with that is that there's usually, there can often be a wide array of projects, many if not all of which are far away from commercialization. So we actually like to work with some of the local accelerators and incubators that where students will go in and get $25,000 in a few months of mentoring and help and come out much, much better prepared to speak with angel investors and investors of other sorts as well. So getting in touch with whatever the local incubator or accelerator is in your region and offering to be a mentor or an advisor or otherwise just, show up and to their version of demo day and be there to see what's coming out. That's very valuable. Also, some areas, I know Pittsburgh's strong in this, is that there are some state or other government-funded agencies or subsidized activities where they'll take seed stage businesses and give them usually a couple hundred thousand dollars maybe and help them move along. And often companies coming out of those investors are much better prepared to pitch to angels. The most important thing, or one very important thing, though, is to work together. Don't try to be, one single angel that's spreading $25,000 or $50,000 checks around. I think that's a pretty tough row to hoe. I think getting into a group, working with others, being able to be part of a $250,000 or $500,000 round is going to be much more effective because, when you're into the very small numbers, there's no leverage to drive terms, and that's a challenging place to be.
Yes, I think you're right. And I guess to that point also, we live in a world of outliers, right? And so we've got to have enough investments where something's going to hit.
Exactly. I guess one last idea for people is you could offer to speak or volunteer to speak, be a guest speaker at some of the local universities, and that's a good way to make connections with some of the local students who are, especially if you can get in a Center for Entrepreneurship or an entrepreneurship program where these people are thinking about startups and business all the time.
Yeah, makes sense. Any others on that topic?
Well, Michael, I'd just like to say one thing. This is Nick from Investor Circle, and with regard to deal flow, so I've only been in my current role for a little over a year, but I'd just like to, offer up some praise to people like you and Michael Gruber, obviously Michael Price, for this initiative. I think this is really useful to just get all of us on the line and really talking and collaborating, and then Michael, obviously, with your efforts with the ACA Clean Tech panel that we had, the call that you mentioned earlier, I just think that I'm seeing a lot of effort to collaborate amongst angel groups because we all recognize how prized and proprietary at times deal flow can be, but also at the same time recognizing that we can really sort of lift all boats. We can really help one another out, particularly when we know more about some of the various criteria that all of our groups have. So whether it be for a syndication opportunity or just for a general referral, we get some pretty unique entrepreneurs that come our way, and they're not always a good fit. And so I think that we have certainly made a much greater effort to refer those entrepreneurs to other groups that, may be a little bit more focused on pre-revenue companies or expansion stage capital. And so I just think that the efforts that people like you are undertaking to really foster collaboration in this space have certainly helped me a lot on the deal flow front. So kudos to all of those who are really sort of propelling those efforts forward.
Good. Well, thank you. Yeah, it's pretty critical. We all work together. No question about it. Any other thoughts or comments before we move on? Okay, let's go over to the next topic, and that is macro trends and their impact on angel investing. And you know, maybe we'll take these one at a time and just kind of brainstorm among us in terms of additional business models or waves or types of companies that might evolve from these macro trends. And one of them is mobile computing. You know, what will 4G plus feeds, you know, power and cloud services, drive next? And, you know, I'll just mention, you know, some of the obvious ones, but, you know, augmented reality and, two-way live video. And with that, maybe we go around Robin and everyone just mentions, any business models that they see that might emanate from, from mobile computing.
Well, I'll add to that. I guess maybe I may miss the opportunity on the first question, but we've actually been seeing a lot in the broad range of the cloud space, and specifically cloud acting as an infrastructure as a service or as a platform as a service. With the explosion of startup technology companies here, we've seen a great business in servicing them, where providing back-end infrastructure and back-end architecture. Probably the closest example of that in a larger scale would be with Amazon. I think EC2 is actually turned out to be a great business for them. So there are smaller mid-sized companies that are doing the same thing here. And we've been doing a lot of research into the cloud space, and it's an incredibly immature industry right now. It's infancy right now, and we think that there's going to be some exponential growth there. I think it was Paul Graham that said that. Don't quote me on this. I'll probably get it wrong, but it's something like 15 years, 99% of all computing and storage will happen on the cloud. I can't fully agree with that, but I think he's going in the right direction and saying that as we move forward, more and more data and computation will be happening in the cloud and in remote computing centers, and it's going to shift the hardware business, and it will definitely shift the storage services, storage as a service business.
Yeah, to your point.
Let me just emphasize that's so true. And I don't know, spent the last 2-3 decades in the IT industry, the cloud is going to make a huge impact on this industry. And, you know, half of all IT is going to end up in the cloud. And it's a massive shift. Don't underestimate it. It's a huge opportunity, too.
No, I just wanted to, comment. You mentioned Amazon, and how brave of Jeff, Bezos, when you have so many retail-centric shareholders, to, be the champion of, what was a tiny little business. And, most tiny little businesses with nebulous, unsure margins and a large corporation just get squashed, almost every time. But he's stuck with it, and, that's now $1 billion-plus business for them and growing. And isn't it just wonderful to see those successes when he had a lot to lose. Standing out on that jumping board. Very good. Any other comments with regard to mobile computing, 4G speeds, cloud?
This is Michael Gruber. Yeah, just one other quick comment on this. I think, in relation to a lot of things going to the cloud, I think security, mobile-based security, and especially with having all the information up in the cloud, that will continue to be something which will become more prominent or interesting for a number of different opportunities.
You're really right about that. I just out of curiosity, a couple of days ago, I went into the app stores, both on the Android and on the Apple iOS side, and I looked at some of their numbers in terms of the best the apps generating the most revenue, and a number of those mobile security apps are really starting to rise up in the rankings where just 24 months ago, they were just almost wholly absent. So, yeah, great to see that. And Internet security is going to keep elevating in terms of its importance. Any last comments on mobile computing? All right, let's go to the next macro trend and opportunities from baby boomers, retirements, increasing. That'll continue through 2020 and beyond. Novel models or growth sectors that any of you have seen in that space addressing that market?
This is Chris, and I'll jump in for a second. We've seen a good number of you talking about security. We've seen a pretty good growth in personal security. So I think this has come up with the as a sister model to the energy efficiency sector. But we've seen a lot of, and specifically in the mobile applications. I think Jawbone is actually releasing some hardware in this space, allowing you to monitor the security of your home. At the same time, we've seen some mobile applications where you can monitor the security of loved ones. You can use mobile applications to get a hold of rescue services, or to get a hold of people in your family if the security ever to arise. And I think that kind of goes back to the main use of mobile devices, the fact that you have this device on you at any given time and you can take it anywhere with you, that personal security coming from a mobile device is just a natural fit.
I'll just comment for my aunt, who's 84 years old, who has an Android phone. I couldn't believe it, but she has her husband unfortunately passed away about a year ago, and she has an app loaded on her iPhone that, you know, whenever she gets around other, you know, singles who, you know, I guess are in their, you know, in their 70s or 80s, the, you know, that you know, meet up with her needs, the thing dings and lets her know. So it's just amazing to see you know, to see that segment adopting cool, you know, these technologies. Any other comments in terms of opportunities or you know, with regard to the baby boomers, retirements increasing on the IT side?
Well, this is Michael Gruber again. Not on the IT side, but just in general, I'm pretty bullish just on the increasing, you know, age of the population for a number of innovative services catering toward the older population. One being in sort of the, you know, you could combine it both in terms of the leisure segment, but more in terms of there's a whole bunch of sort of, you know, life management services, which help sort of manage as a, you know, person goes through this, the latter part of the year, about the discretionary income, of being able to figure out, you know, the great new activities to do and helping to manage travel, financial, as well as a number of other aspects in their life. So I think that could continue to be very interesting. And then related to that is on the, you know, health and medical side. You know, along with longevity of life, there's you're dealing with lots of different health issues, and there's lots of different drugs that you take and drug interactions. But the ability to continue to manage and have remote monitoring of health, having preventative care, being able to sort of on the fly be able to, you know, analyze health conditions and have recommended solutions or changing of habits, both from food, nutrition, as well as, you know, drug or health regimen, I think will continue to be a very interesting area.
Okay, very good. We've got so many of these macro trends, you might just have to do another session on this in a few months. Next one, online shopping continues not just to grow, but it's also going social. And there was just last month at our local angel you know, meeting, we had one that interested a lot of us, you know, called Pretty Near Pocket, where women can go into a department store or a CVS, and you know, you've got that usual very, very long rack of all these different cosmetics, and you know, who knows what is good and what isn't. You just, you know, hold anyone up to your phone, it scans the code and then lets you know within your circle of friends, whether it be Facebook or others, you know, who's used that, asks for recommendations, and then if there aren't any immediate ones within your circle, reaches out further for recommendations, thoughts, usage. It's just really fascinating to watch how social is now starting to invade into that online, you know, shopping area to really make you know, significant change in just about every category. Where you know, for a number of years it was just you know, getting recommendations on cars and the Amazon comments and things of that nature. Any elaboration by the others on online shopping and the social trend within online shopping or anything along those topics?
It's Chris Kay again. I have a kind of a thesis that I've been working on, and I've been seeing seeing reality move closer to this thesis that Facebook's somewhat ultimate commercialization will eventually come out as an e-commerce platform. We saw L'Oreal did a, I believe they put their catalog up on Facebook, and I believe you were able to execute transactions. I might be wrong on that. But eventually, I see that you would not necessarily, with Nike, for example, instead of just liking Nike's page, Nike will be eventually able to post their catalog of products for the season on their Facebook page, on their commerce page, and you'll not only be able to like those individual items, but be able to execute the transaction through a commerce platform, and then tell all your friends that you bought these great Nike shoes, and your friends can like that too, or they can buy them as well. Which I think, if things go in that direction, you'll ultimately be able to leverage the social aspect. I think we've been doing it in a manual roundabout way. You know, people take photos of what they buy and then post them to their Facebook pages. Eventually, I think that process will get streamlined, and it will also be an opportunity for Facebook to finally commercialize on their platform, which, in my opinion, their revenue doesn't necessarily justify their user rate, or their user base, nor the size of their platform. But eventually, I've actually seen quite a few companies, startup companies, moving closer and closer to this area, whether it be gift registries that have a social aspect to them, or actually, that's probably the biggest one that I've seen, but nobody has yet to actually get the execution of the transaction, the actual e-commerce side of it done. But I'm waiting to see that happen.
Yeah, that mobile aspect of online shopping really does open a number of new capabilities, doesn't it? Like, I had a plan submitted just a couple of months ago from this entrepreneur that, you know, you can just literally walk up to any stadium for any venue, you know, basketball, football, you know, whatever. The system literally wakes up and tells you who's got spare tickets and where they are, you know, approximate to you within 30, 50, 100 yards in what direction with an arrow or you can just consume the transaction, you know, right there. Just fast, you know, suddenly it adds that ability of real time or near real time, you know, into shopping, you know, regardless of the location. Just fascinating to watch that. Well, we're definitely not going to be able to get through these other macro trends, so maybe we'll schedule another session in a few months to try to work through the rest. I did want to give the audience a chance to either ask questions or make any comments that they would like to make, maybe some additional interesting aspects they would like to point out to the others. So if anyone would like to either ask a question or make a comment, just go ahead and hit *6 on your phone to open up your mic and just go right ahead. All right. That means the panelists must have done such an excellent job. There's just nothing more to say. All right. Everyone on the call today may listen to past events and participate in future events at no charge. You may see a full listing of future events at angelpool.org. Again, angelpool.org, and then clicking on the Knowledge tab. There are a number of high-profile speakers and panels coming up that will be discussing various aspects of angel investing best practices. The next few events are on December 1st. We've got Om Malik, founder of Giga Om, talking about future trends that he sees and how that's going to affect angels and their investing strategies. There's also a number of classic ones that were recently done, such as Reid Hoffman and Chris Dixon, that are worth listening to. January 26th, we have another panel on monitoring portfolio company best practices. On January 26th, we've got another monitoring portfolio companies and board effectiveness panel, which should be pretty fascinating. Just another upcoming event, the ACA Annual Summit will be held in just a few months. It's going to be in Austin this year, just before the famous South by Southwest Interactive Conference. There will also be a pre-summit programming by the Angel Resources Institute. If anyone has not attended an ACA summit, they are exceptional in both contents and contacts. I cannot say enough good things about the last one by MIT this year. I would like to thank our panelists for sharing their thoughts with so many angels across North America today. David Miller with Clean Energy Venture Group, Michael Gruber with Cornerstone Angels, Nick Flores with Investor Circle, Ed Engler with Pittsburgh Equity Partners, and Chris Kay with Multiplicity Accelerator. Thank you. Your involvement in education and entrepreneurship sets a new high benchmark for others to follow. On behalf of all the angel groups that were able to join across North America today, we really appreciate your efforts and thoughts. With that, we are hereby concluded. Thank you all, and have a great day.
You're about to end this meeting.